dwelling in the darkest depths of the mind. It's time for Mark D. Valenti and Brain Burrow.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Brain Burrow. I am your host, Mark D. Valenti, and tonight I have a special guest, David Howard Thornton. David, how are you?
Hey, I am doing very well, Mark. How are you doing?
I am fantastic, and really appreciate the opportunity to reconnect with you after we were on Joe's podcast a couple weeks ago. And I want to sort of start out, as always, on the show and ask you, who is David Howard Thornton?
A big old geek. That's the best way to describe me. I'm a big old geek. I'm a huge entertainment junkie. I'm, you know, free spirited individual, love to laugh, and I'm that way because I have dealt with a lot of stuff in my past, and you know, that's what I've overcome, and so I've learned to laugh at life.
Yeah, so David, thanks for introducing that idea about your past, because I don't know that much about it, and I'm not sure how many of the viewers do. And you know, on this program specifically, we'd like to kind of dig a little bit deeper. So can you talk a little bit about some of that and sort of what causes you now to focus on laughter and free-spiritedness as a way to deal with whatever happened?
Well, it's two things really with me. I mean, first of all, it comes back to like my middle school days when I was back home in Alabama. I was a late bloomer, so I didn't hit puberty until I was like 16. So all during middle school, I was shorter than everybody else. I was skinny, had braces, glasses, sang soprano in the choir, wasn't very athletic. So yeah, easy target in, you know, somewhere like Alabama where everything is focused on sports and football. And I was not a very sports-minded person. I was more of an artsy type of guy. I loved to sing. Yeah, I was in the choir and all that. So I was a very easy target, and that's kind of what got me into doing acting. Was my mom noticed I was being bullied so much, and she knew how I was at home, where I was always joking around and stuff like that. She's like, "Have your classmates ever seen this side of you?" I'm like, "No." So she encouraged me to try out for our school choir's production of a Mickey's Christmas Carol that year for the role of Mickey Mouse, because I did an excellent imitation of him. And so I did, and I got the role, and we're doing the show, and everything starts going wrong on stage. Like the one part, like the set collapsed on top of us. It was thankfully a cardboard set.
But, oh my gosh.
That happened, you know, one. Oh yeah. We had our Cratchit family chicken dinner went flying across the room because the table broke and it launched across the auditorium. So I was like, "Oh boy, we got fast food." Those are the kind of jokes I was making. And I had everybody laughing. And for the first time at that school, people were laughing with me instead of at me. And I loved that feeling because I was in control for once too. And it was a wonderful feeling, and I was like, I want more of this. And so that's why I really wanted to get more into acting, because I love to be able to bring that kind of joy and, you know, merriment to people and make them laugh like that. And so that's one aspect. And the other is just that's how I dealt with a lot of pain. It was when I was in college, my mom came down with a fourth stage esophageal cancer, and she was only supposed to live for about 6 months tops, and out of sheer will she forced herself to live for 2.5 years because she wanted to see me graduate college. Still, unfortunately, she wasn't able to make it, but during that whole entire time I was dealing with a lot of problems, but I would see her struggling, and so I would always have to put on a brave face in front of her because I didn't want her to see me upset. So I was always cracking jokes and doing anything just to, you know, liven the atmosphere, not just for her, but also for my family. I was just the clown there in the house because, someone had to cheer everybody up because it was just so depressing. And that, I when all everything else was so depressing, it made me more depressed. So I was doing also for myself, trying to cheer myself up in a weird way. But that's how I also dealt with my mom's death later on, was I really threw myself more into acting. I was in oddly enough, I didn't get my degree in college in theater. I got it in elementary education, and that next year when I went back for my internship, my in a month's time, when right before I started college and right when I started my in that time period, my grandmother died, a friend of mine committed suicide, my dog died, and my sister married a homeless man that I did not know, who is now in jail for molesting a bunch of children. So it's like, oof. And this is like a year after my mom died, and I was going through a lot. I was just downward spiral, and I was doing story time with my students one day, and I was doing all the voices for the characters, and the kids were just laughing and having fun. They wanted me to keep going, but I had to move on to the next lesson. But it hit me in that moment. I was like, I am getting more fulfillment out of making my students laugh and entertaining them than I am teaching them. And I was like, this is what I need to do. This is my calling then. This is what makes me happy, is entertaining people and making people laugh and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's when I decide, okay, I'm gonna pursue this instead with my life. So I finished my degree, so I had something to fall back on. But after that, I moved up to New York and pursued this as a full-time career.
Oh my gosh, thank you for sharing that. I mean, it sounds like you had quite the journey over your life. A lot of downs, but definitely there's a turning point there whenever you realized that you would entertain people as opposed to, like you said, teaching.
Yes.
How did you get through all of those times? I mean, the way you described it, your mother was extremely important in your life. You had all these things.
Right.
It sounds like you were responsible for keeping other people's spirits up. I mean, how did you deal with that during that time specifically?
For myself, when I wasn't around other people, I would just kind of just close myself off. I would just, because I'm one of those weird, like, I guess you could say I'm an extroverted introvert. So after I was with everybody else, I would have to just be by myself for a little while, and I would just decompress, and I would say play video games, or I would play piano, or something that I could work my problems out on. Escape in a way somehow too,
Yeah, I
if
think
that
that's
makes sense.
a no, it actually makes a lot of sense, right? A lot of times when people are struggling a lot, they find ways to distract. Sometimes it's unhealthy, sometimes it's a healthy distraction. You hear about video games, and as you know, a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, video games cause violence, etc. But it sounds like you used it as a way to, in a healthy way, distract from the anxiety and all the stress that was going on with you at the time.
Yeah, that's exactly what it did, and I think that's why I also threw myself more into acting too, because I always kind of looked at it this way. It's like, for those few hours where I'm on stage, I get to be someone else. I get to escape from myself. I put all of my problems at the stage door, and I get to be someone else for a little while.
Yeah, that's phenomenal, right? That you again were able to use your what you're feeling and do it in a positive way that actually entertains a lot of people. Again, continue to do that. So kudos to you for being able to do that.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So, on this show, we talk a bit about the philosophy of wabi-sabi, which is sort of this Japanese aesthetic, which I'm always mispronouncing, but it really is saying about there's imperfection all around us. So, if I was looking at David Howard Thornton, knowing we live in an imperfect world, what is something that you want to improve about yourself? Where's something that you say, all right, here's something I can do better?
I think with me, it's I have a hard time, sometimes just being my true self around people. Like when I'm with a big group, I wear different hats depending on who I'm around. And so, some people like when I'm on set, they see my sillier side. They don't see my serious side as much, I guess you could say, or you know. So I think that's something I need to work on more. But I learned something very interesting about myself last year, and I always wondered, but I finally got tested for it, and I learned that I was on the spectrum, and that made so many things about my idiosyncrasies make so much more sense about myself. So I was like, oh, because I used to get upset with myself. It's like, why can't I be like other people? Why am I stuck in certain ways? Or why do I, you know, I would have sometimes a hard time socializing with people or getting my thoughts out in the right ways. And now I'm like, oh, that's why.
Well, there's a power in putting a name to something. Clearly. I
Yes.
mean, and first of all, thank you for talking about this on the show, and being able to verbalize that and talk through it. But it sounds like that was a point in your life whenever, again, things made sense and it made you better able to cope day to day.
Yeah, I'm one of those people. I always have to make
So I
things
think,
make
yeah,
sense
so I
to
think that.
myself.
Okay. Well, and I know that, the last program we were on with Joe, I know that you, to your point, you're, in some ways you use humor, it seems like, as a way to sort of deal sometimes with the social interactions. And I notice on this show, I want to give you a compliment that you're definitely diving a bit deep about your feelings. So what situations makes it okay for you to dive deeper into the real David Howard Thornton versus the sort of joking, extroverted, funny, and entertaining, but what situations allow you to kind of delve deeper about yourself?
I think I just have to know people better. I have to be comfortable around people.
Yeah,
So and it
and that makes
just
sense.
depends on the person. Some people I just instantly feel comfortable with. Others takes me a little bit longer.
Yeah, and that makes sense, right? We want to feel safe in situations and being able to talk. So I appreciate you, again, diving deep here. So let me ask this. If we're talking about social interactions, clearly everybody's social interactions have changed in the last year. A lot of, video chats and everything else. How have you been able to deal with that?
Well, for me, I've been doing a lot of Zoom calls. I've been doing a lot of podcasts, so that's kind of helped me socialize a lot more. Because I was used to doing the convention circuits, and that's how I was able to do a lot of socializing. Because I'm such a homebody, so that was one of those things that was getting me out more, and I kind of missed that. Because like I said, introvert at times, so it's. I'm weird in big, social situations, but for some reason, conventions, I just feel so comfortable. And I'm like, oh, I think there's that. I guess people already know who I am, so I don't feel like I have to like prove myself to people. I'm like, oh, they already know I'm Art the Clown, so it that just breaks so much ice for me.
No, I mean, it makes sense, and I think that's very well said. And I want to say, even just talking with you have a self-awareness about yourself, and even being able to identify that you are Art the Clown at the convention, so it makes it easier. You don't have to be necessarily David Howard Thornton. So I think that says a lot that you're able to identify that about
Right.
yourself. Do you ever find challenges at the conventions? I mean, I'm just wondering what's your biggest challenge when you've gone to the conventions, do you have any challenges there?
Sometimes I get the after parties. I get a little bit shy around people. I'm weird about approaching people. I'm better when people approach me for conversation.
Okay. So it goes back to the shyness, the introversion as well. Makes sense. May I ask, if you don't mind, since you mentioned about your mother, tell me about
Sure.
your mother, right? It's a typical psychology thing. So why was she so impactful in your life? What, because it sounds like she was influential throughout the span of your life. What made her so impactful?
I think it's because she was always very keyed into me. She was a special ed teacher, first of all. So, and my sister's special needs as well. She's mentally and physically handicapped. And so she was very in tune, and I had various problems growing up. I had a chemical imbalance, so I had a hard time controlling my anger. I would basically would have the I always called it the Bruce Banner Incredible Hulk syndrome, where one second I was myself and someone who would do something and push me over the edge, and then I would just lash out and I would kind of block it out. I had no idea what I had done until afterwards when I had calmed down. And so from that early stage, my mom was very focused on trying to figure out what was going on with me, and she wanted to help me. And so she had always taken a very active role in my life from day one, basically. So I think that's probably why. And so, but it wasn't like, that typical, like, overbearing mom. She wanted me to live my own life, but she was very keen to into what was going on in my life.
Yeah, it seemed like it. And to your point, she didn't sound like a helicopter parent. She sounded, the fact that she sort of
Correct.
guided you to, she guided you to go into the Christmas carol and everything really shows that she felt like you maybe needed to maybe safely push your boundaries as well.
Yeah. She
So,
was good at
yeah.
that kind of stuff. And
Yeah.
it wasn't
So,
just with me.
yeah,
She was
so
like that with like everybody.
I mean, she sounds like she was a pretty incredible person that she was able to sort of help see people for who they are and help them become a better person as well.
Yes.
So, was there any other influence in your life? Who else would you say? I mean, I know before we talked about, of course, the great Lon Chaney as being an influencer as sort of your craft. But I'm wondering, do you have anybody else in your life that sort of has influenced you throughout the course of it?
Oh boy. Well, my dad also was a big influence, but he was, a different type. He was more of like a calming, settling influence. Like my parents were total opposite ends of the spectrum. My mom was the very extroverted person. She wore the pants in the family. So she didn't take crap off anybody. She was just very, people knew not to piss off Betsy Thornton. It's just like, then my dad was the very opposite. My dad was a NASA engineer, very logic-minded man, very quiet, very reserved, but very active in my life because his father wasn't very active in his life. He was a major workaholic, and he always swore that, when he was become a father, he was going to be there. And he anything I did, like any sports I played as a child, when I took Taekwondo, he took lessons with me. He was like my coach when I was in soccer and t-ball and all that. Then when I started doing theater, he would either be in shows with me or he would work on the sets and backstage. So he always wanted to be involved with what I did in life as well. And so even with my acting career, I think he's been not what most people had with their parents, where he was extremely supportive from the get-go. When I came to him saying that, hey, I want to pursue this instead of teaching, I was expecting him to say, no, you've put all this time and effort and money into a teaching career. You need to do that. That's a stable career path. I have a visitor. But no, he was like, no, your mother and I always thought that you should be an actor, but we didn't want to tell you what to do with your life. We thought we want you to figure that out for yourself. You need to make your own decisions. We just wanted to guide you. And so he was a very prominent figure as well, and he still has been. He's ever since then, he's always supported what I've been doing here in New York ever since. And hey, sweetie. Hi. Gotta love.
No, that's good. Hey, that's all right. That's
Oh
real
good,
life.
there's a butthole. They just do whatever they want to do.
That's
It's
right.
just like,
That's right.
hey.
That's right. That's right. That's right. No, I mean it's
It's real.
yeah.
This is
That's right. It's
unscripted,
the whole thing is unscripted. That's exactly right. It just adds to it. So,
Yeah.
yes. So your father, your mother, I mean, that's, it sounds like you had a very supportive family that was there for you and kind of picked you
Yes.
up when you were down and then guided you to where you needed to be.
Oh, very much so. I was very fortunate in that regard.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, and I know just for anybody who's listening, we have a slight delay, so if it seems like we're talking over a little bit to each other, we're not just being rude. We actually have a little bit of a delay here, so thanks everybody for their patience. So how, given that, in talking to you now, you seem very self-aware, you identify things that you want to work on. How has your life changed in the last few years?
Oh, a lot. Especially once Terrifier came out. I mean, first of all, I was waiting tables for 13 years as a struggling artist, I guess you could say. So that changed everything. I didn't have to wait tables anymore once I started doing the convention circuit, which was wonderful because then I could fully focus on acting, which I wanted to do. I would find myself when I was waiting tables, you would just get so comfortable in that rut of just always working, going to work every single day, and then I wouldn't go to as many auditions. And so, I sometimes I felt, oh boy, I'm losing my focus here. I didn't move here to be a waiter. I moved here to focus on acting. I even like the year I got cast in Terrifier right before it, I took a few months off just to focus on acting and auditioning when I got back from a tour instead of waiting tables. And I'm glad I did that because it allowed me to really just narrow my focus on what I did. And that's how I got to audition for Terrifier as well and worked out well for me. But once Terrifier took off, it changed that whole trajectory. I was finally, I guess you could say, financially secure in a lot of ways, which was nice. And I think it's helped me build a lot more confidence as well, because I would deal with a lot of depression for years, even after my mom died. Because not just that, but it was like just going back to my insecurities I had as a middle schooler. It just those stayed with you for all those years of bullying. So, when you because I hate saying it, but with this career path, you face a lot of rejection, and sometimes they tell you not to take it personally, but sometimes it even when you try not to, it just inadvertently happens. It's just on a subconscious level. But I think Terrifier changed that for me. I was like, okay, I'm actually doing something that people are enjoying, and it's actually taking me somewhere. So, okay, this is good. This is good.
Yeah, thanks for talking through that, and also again talking about depressive symptoms, and it's natural considering everything, that happened. And when you found yourself sort of down like that, and you're a good point about acting, right? Because I've gone on some auditions as well, and I thought, okay, I got this. And then no matter how much you say, all right, it's not me, oftentimes you think, all right, what did I do? So
Yep.
how are you able to get through those times? I mean, just saying something, as isn't always enough. So how are you able to get the times,
Yeah.
and how did you stop yourself from continuing to go down the depression spiral?
Well, I think part of it was just I had to build a tough skin to it. I remember way back in my early days before I moved here to New York, back just doing community theater, I would take it personally if I didn't get cast in something that I knew I was really good for. And I would get very upset about it. And when I moved here to New York, I was like, I can't be that way. I just had to tell myself, I can't be that way anymore because I'm in a city of very, very talented individuals. And I had to realize it's like, if I don't get cast, it's not necessarily because I'm not good. It's just I'm a small fish in a very large pond now with a bunch of equally talented, if not more talented, fish. And so if I'm not getting a part, it might come down to things that I have no control over. Yeah, I might even just look like someone one the people on the committee used to date. And they're just like, I don't know. Those are the thing. I had to learn because I'm all about control. I like to be in control of things. It goes back to my chemical imbalance when I was younger, which I never mentioned, but it went away when I hit puberty. It all kind of balanced out, but that always kind of stay with me. I like to be in control of myself, and I think that also deals with my being on the spectrum as well. But I had to learn is like, yeah, there are just some things I can't control. It's like I control what I do in the room. I control my audition, but after that, I have no control, and I have to accept that. So I had to learn to just, okay, I go in there and do my audition. And I might go, oh, I could have done this better. I could have done that better. But I just make mental notes in my head. Okay, next time, do this better, do this better, do this better. don't suck, don't suck, don't suck, and just throw it away. And that was just something I just had to learn to do over the years. And now I've gotten to the point where I just, like, especially with voiceover auditions, I will just record something, send it in, and hope for the best. Because sometimes I'll hear months later, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we want to cast you." My latest job, I recorded my callback after almost a 20-hour day of filming, and I was just dead exhausted, but I had to turn it in, and I was at a hotel, so I didn't have all my recording equipment. So I was like, "Oh, this is a crappy callback. I am so sorry." I sent it in. I'm like, "Okay, whatever. Okay, well, we'll just pray for the best, I guess." And here it was, like a month later, and I get the call. "Oh yeah, they want to cast you." I'm like, "Oh wow, really? I forgot about that."
Well,
I mean, those are the things you just deal with. You just have to, and that's, I had to learn to deal with that. But that took like a decade.
Well, and I think that's a great point, right? I mean, I've talked to a lot of people over the years, especially outside of this world in healthcare, and it takes a long time to get to where you are, right? There's a lot of people that get frustrated and, you know, I just feel like their confidence goes down. And as you just said, it took about a decade to get there. So I'm wondering, what would you tell somebody who is maybe struggling right now, thinking, "I'm never going to get it, I'm not going to be good enough"? I mean, what might you tell that person?
Keep going. Just keep going. Like I said, it just comes down to things that you have no control over. I have literally lost a role due to a coin flip. That was the only deciding factor. It's like, it did not come up heads for me. But oddly enough, it did come up heads, because if I had gotten cast in that one production, it was Peter and the Starcatcher, the first tour of that, I would have missed being able to audition for Terrifier. So it worked out the right way for me. And that's what I've also had to learn is, yeah, you might not get this job, but the job you might not have gotten might have freed you up for a job that you were actually right for, that will take you somewhere. It sounds so cliche, but sometimes you have to just trust in the fates and just let whatever happen. That's just something I've had to just learn to do, is just go with the flow, but just keep going. Just keep being persistent with it. If it's something you love to do and you can't imagine doing anything else, then keep at it and keep learning. There's always something more to learn. And I do so much people watching. When I'm out in public, even on TV, I mean, when I'm watching TV and movies and playing video games, I will sit there and just analyze everybody I'm watching, even the background people. Sometimes someone will do something in the background. I'm like, I like that. I'm going to remember that. So those are the two things I would just really recommend. So keep learning and keep persevering.
Wow. Thank you. That was extremely insightful. Appreciate you sharing that, especially because so many people struggle out there. So any type of advice, especially from somebody who's in real life had struggles of their own, it's extremely insightful. So thank you.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So last thing I want to ask before we sort of end the program today, what's one thing you want people to take away about you after listening to us or viewing us today?
Oh boy. I guess you could say that just because I play a big, huge killer on screen and do horrible things to people, that's not who I am. It's like, it's a part I play. I'm a totally different person in real life. And that's how so many of us actors are. We play characters, and we're people in real life. And that's something I've found fascinating when I go to conventions and I meet these celebrities I grew up idolizing and watching in films, and getting to meet them and see them as people instead of just being celebrities, because people have flaws. Everybody has flaws. I have so many flaws. And you have to learn to accept those flaws and embrace those flaws, because everybody has them.
Well said. That's a perfect way to end the program today. I want to thank you, David, for really kind of digging deep, talking about you, the real you, and everything you've experienced. It was extremely valuable to me to hear this. So thank you very much for appearing on the program today.
Oh, you're welcome. This was fun, actually.
Okay, good. That's great. I'm glad you think so. I'll have to do it again sometime.
I enjoy it.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay,
You're welcome.
so I want to thank everybody for listening in and thank my guest, David Howard Thornton. And this is Mark D. Valenti for Brain Burrow, and have an amazing day.
You just dug deep with Mark D. Do you want more? Follow Mark on Instagram at Valenti Horror and subscribe to the Brain Burrow podcast.